Hello, and welcome to Peter Pan Man Dan, a podcast about fatherhood. I'm Dan, a screenwriter and first-time father, and these are my adventures. This episode is called The Fourth Trimester, and is about us bringing Theo home from the hospital and discovering just how hard taking care of a newborn is. Adopting a pet in Los Angeles isn't as easy as you'd think. Most places require a rigorous application process. You have to interview, be screened, fill out a pile of paperwork. Someone might even inspect your house or apartment to make sure it's fit for an animal. When I was single, and even more of a Peter Pan type, I resisted a pet for that reason. I didn't want someone to look at my life and say, "Yeah, there's no way a dog can live in this shithole." A friend once noted that it's easier to get a gun than it is to get a dog, a statement that is sadly very true in America. But with a baby, there's no application. There's no interview to ensure that you're psychologically sound enough to raise a child. No one comes to your house to make sure it's not doubling as a meth den. The hospital just wraps your baby up in a footprint-patterned swaddle and hands it over, sending you on your merry way with a good luck pat on the ass. Actually, now that I think about it, I didn't even get a good luck pat on the ass. I feel screwed. God, I need better health insurance. After two long, mostly sleepless nights in the hospital, Meredith and I were deemed fit enough to take this human baby home. This was even despite our poor showing the previous night. Theo had started bawling his head off around 2 a.m. It was so hard that we had to call for the nurse. The nurse came in and asked if we had checked his diaper. The truth was, we hadn't even thought to. The nurse said something like, "You've got to check his diaper." And we said something like, "Shit, sorry, we don't know what the fuck we're doing." Sure enough, Theo had squirted out a big, messy one. Once the nurse cleaned him up, Theo went right back to sleep. After running this masterclass in parenting ineptitude, Meredith and I exchanged looks. We were already overwhelmed by how much we had to learn. But even with this, we still got to take Theo home the next day. No questions asked. His pediatrician, Dr. Robert Hamilton, popped over on the morning before our departure. He told us how cute our baby was, among other things. Theo apparently hates compliments because he started crying. Dr. Hamilton grabbed him, put him in a hold where his left hand was around Theo's chest, just below his chin, and his right was on his little tush. It looked awkward, like he was strangling our baby. I was tempted to jump in and ask him what the fuck he was doing. But he was a professional, and we had already established that we knew nothing. So we let him go ahead and strangle our baby. "This is a hold that calms a crying baby," explained Dr. Hamilton. And to our surprise, it worked like magic. Theo was instantly calm, happy even. "Wow, you're a magician," I noted. "Yeah, it's a pretty neat trick. Use it if he's being extra fussy," said Dr. Hamilton with a wink. "Great," I said. I tried to wink back, but was so tired that I just blinked with both eyes. "Any questions for me?" Dr. Hamilton asked. I wanted to ask if he'd come home with us and raise our child for the next 18 years. But instead, I shook my head. He handed me back our calm baby. Theo took one look at me and started crying again. The last thing Theo needed to do in the hospital was big. He had to get circumcised. Poor little guy had to start his life by getting part of his penis cut off, making him yearn for the womb even more, I bet. He probably thought life was full of hospitals and dick surgeries because that's all he had been exposed to so far. After his procedure, they very briefly taught us how to care for his circumcision. The nurse teaching us was Irish. Since my mom was adopted, growing up I never knew what nationality I was. I eventually took a 23andMe test, and the results concluded that I was 67% Irish, which instantly explained why I loved alcohol so darn much. I suddenly thought this Irish factoid was something the nurse might want to know, even in this inappropriate moment. "I'm 67% Irish," I told her.
"That there's a lot of Irish. Sorry to hear that," she said in her enchanting accent that I suck at doing.
We exchanged a warm Irish smile like we were sipping Guinness in a pub in Dublin instead of holding a freshly circumcised baby in a maternity ward. "How's he looking?" I asked, glancing towards my son's new penis.
"His penis?"
she asked with a jovial smirk. I nodded to confirm that that's what I was referring to.
"Oh, it's great. Great penis. Best penis in Santa Monica."
"You hear that, Theo? You have the best penis in Santa Monica," I said. "So we have to redress his wound every time we change him?" asked Meredith, steering the conversation back on track while shooting me a look. She was already proving to be the more responsible parent. I mean, here I was making penis jokes with the Irish nurse instead of treating everything with the seriousness it deserved. I was showcasing just how ill-prepared I was.
"Yep, every time," said the nurse, no longer joking.
With the assurance that our son had the best penis in town, we headed home to start our very different lives. Bringing your child home for the first time is surreal. It's like getting a new roommate, but one whose shit you have to put up with for the next 18 years, regardless of how loud or messy they are. And honestly, they aren't gonna pull their weight. This little guy wasn't washing any dishes, taking the trash out, or helping pay our electricity bill. Our place isn't big. A two-bedroom condo in Santa Monica, running somewhere around 1,000 square feet. We use literally every square foot of those 1,000. Space was so tight that I had to clear out one of the closets I was storing my non-essential crap in. Mainly my basketball cards, Pez collection, and a pile of my favorite movie scripts like Adaptation, Groundhog Day, and Royal Tenenbaums. I was sad to have to tuck my treasures into storage, but now that Theo was here, it was time to finally grow up. It was time to focus on providing my child with a great childhood instead of reliving my own. No more Peter Pan Man Dan. That's part of having a kid, I suppose, giving up a part of yourself so you can make room for them. So there we were in our little two-bedroom apartment with our new roommate. Just the three of us. Well, and our amazing dog Maple. God, I love her. She sprinted over to greet us, wagging her tail and attacking our faces with licks. "Meet your new brother," we said to Maple. She took one look at Theo, stopped wagging her tail, and looked up at us. She was pissed. "This thing isn't staying here long, right?" she seemed to imply. She instantly hated him. I half expected her to drag little Theo outside by her adorable teddy bear mouth and bury him under a palm tree. "He's here to stay," we reported. She scoffed, then waddled into the kitchen and stared up at the treat cabinet, wanting to stress-eat her way through some chicken jerky or gnaw on a bully stick. It wasn't going to be an easy adjustment for Maple. She was our first baby, our princess, and we treated her like one. But now she had competition. Once we got Theo in his bassinet next to our bed, we looked at him, then at each other, marveling that we had created this little thing that was now part of our lives. He was ours. We were his parents. We had to take care of him forever, protect him from the world. It's a crazy feeling. We were euphoric. We were ecstatic. We were in awe of the little guy that sort of looked like us. "He has my eyes and your toes," I said. "I just can't believe he's ours," said Meredith. "I know, it's surreal," I said. "He's so precious, so small," noted Meredith as we continued to stare. It was becoming apparent it would be difficult to ever take our eyes off of him, even if we wanted to. The creation of life really is such a marvel. "I just hope we don't fuck him up," I said, poetically verbalizing my biggest fear. Thankfully, we had a little bit of help in town to make sure we didn't fuck him up right off the bat. Meredith's parents were kind enough to drive out from New Jersey. They had rented an Airbnb a few blocks away for a couple of months so they could be close by if we needed them. My mom had also flown in from Salt Lake. My mom had battled through 136 chemotherapies to fight her non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, all so she could do shit like hold her grandchildren. Despite having Meredith's parents and my mom around, Theo was ultimately our responsibility. So we had to start learning how to take care of him. A few months prior, Meredith and I had taken a baby preparation class over Zoom. I admittedly sort of half-listened while checking basketball stats on my phone, occasionally scribbling a note or two just to fake like I was engaged. The class was taught by a lady in her 60s who I wished was my grandma, so she'd sing, "Skid-a-ma-rink-a-dinky-dink, skid-a-ma-rink-a-doo," while tickling my belly before rocking me to bed every night. We'll call her Grandma Zoom. One thing Grandma Zoom mentioned is that babies aren't ready to come out when they do, but have to on account of our large human heads. Other animals, such as the giraffe and zebra, can run a week after birth. Hell, I saw an episode of Planet Earth 2 where marine iguanas hatched on a snake-covered beach and had to run for their lives upon birth. Human babies are much more helpless. There's no way they're running from snakes, or from anything. They need more time before they're able to do anything but sleep, cry, eat, and shit. So, the first 3 months are basically an additional trimester. This extra trimester is considered by most to be the hardest part, the end marking an inflection point, where a switch is flipped and things magically get easier. Infants are in what I like to call the fourth trimester, said Grandma Zoom in a sort of know-it-all tone. We loved that description, the first parenting stretch being like an extra trimester. But Grandma Zoom mentioned it ad nauseum, and always with the what I like to call preemptive, like she had invented the concept, even though it's something we had heard from several other people and read in books. Grandma Zoom mentioned the whole fourth trimester thing so many times that by the end of the class, Meredith and I started poking fun of it. He'll need lots of blankets. I'm not sure you've heard about this, but babies are underdeveloped, so he'll be in what I like to call the fourth trimester, we joke. But now that Theo was out of Meredith and in our home, we quickly realized that the fourth trimester was no laughing matter. That shit is real. Babies are initially these little gobular need monsters, taking all your attention and energy, while not giving so much as a smile back. Meredith did most of the hard work, like breastfeeding, but I insisted on being involved, like a hero on his way towards winning several World's Greatest Dad awards. I didn't want to be one of those pricks who bragged about never changing a diaper. But I quickly realized that winning that World's Greatest Dad award wasn't going to be a cakewalk. I mean, I didn't think Theo would come out running like a zebra or shouting at the TV while we watched Utah Jazz games. But I also didn't realize just how helpless babies are. I guess when I imagined being a father, I never pictured the infant stage. I never dreamed of holding a tiny baby in my arms. In fact, newborns are so small, so fragile, that they make me nervous. Instead, I jump straight to fantasizing about the fun stuff, shooting hoops in the driveway, shoulder rides around the house, cooking pancakes on a Saturday morning, building exploding mini volcanoes, making fart noises and funny faces, being awestruck by dinosaurs, him yelling, "Daddy!" at the top of his lungs when I got home from work, then sprinting over to hug my leg, shit like that. However, I soon learned that infants aren't something you enjoy, but rather survive. Fuck the Mandalorian for making babies seem fun. And despite the classes and books, it became apparent that we didn't know what we were doing. Grandma Zoom had taught us how to swaddle, but we had practiced on a stuffed teddy bear wearing a Utah Jazz jersey. Having the real thing was very different. "Am I doing this right?" I asked Meredith as I swaddled Theo for the first time. "Honestly, I don't know. I think so," guessed Meredith. "Oh, watch his circumcision." "God, this is a real shit show," I said. "I know. Can we make it through this?" "Honestly, probably not," I joked. "Come on, we can, right?" said Meredith. "Yeah, we'll be okay. We just have to get through the first 3 months, then everyone says it gets easier," I said. "Yeah, okay. I just feel like we have no idea what we're doing," said Meredith. I looked at Meredith and saw that she could use a little cheering up. I remembered us gleefully making fun of Grandma Zoom and said, "Yeah, well, babies are underdeveloped, so we're in what I like to call the fourth trimester." Meredith was too tired, too stressed to find this hilarious joke very funny. Since we are so lost, the first few days in hell consisted of a lot of trial and error, guessing, hoping, praying that we were doing everything right, that we were swaddling him correctly, that we were feeding him enough, that he was sleeping comfortably, that we were holding him the right way, that we weren't doing something that would permanently fuck him up and cause him to one day write a memoir about what shitty parents we were. Needless to say, it was becoming apparent that Theo and I wouldn't be shooting hoops or exploding mini volcanoes anytime soon. And the whole time, we were terrified of making a mistake. After putting him to bed with a pacifier in his mouth one night, I realized that I didn't know if that was okay to do. I Googled and Googled and Googled. Everywhere said it was safe. But what does Google really know, you know? I didn't want to be that asshole whose baby choked on a pacifier on one of the first nights, so I just sat next to his bassinet for hours. He survived, and I was exceptionally tired the next morning. "I'm tired," I said to Meredith. "Me too, I'm exhausted. I feel like I was hit by a bus," said Meredith. "That bus is what I like to call the fourth trimester," I joked. One massive bummer about babies is since they can't talk, their favorite mode of communication is crying. Theo was mostly a good guy right off the bat. Certainly not what the professionals like Grandma Zoom would call colicky. But still, he was a baby, so he'd let us know when we were doing a lackluster job. Crying is ranked pretty high on the most annoying sounds in the world rankings. It became a constant background noise during our descent into hell. We learned from the classes and books that there are only so many things a baby could be crying about. Theo was either hungry, too hot or cold, overstimulated, tired, or just like being an asshole. It's not like he was upset about adult issues. He didn't just get dumped or lose his job. He wasn't on Twitter. He wasn't fussing about the filibuster never ending or about global warming getting to a dire point. He was crying because we weren't meeting a basic need. But boy, did I wish he could talk. There were so many times mid-wail that I looked at Theo and said, "What do you need, buddy?" Like he would suddenly stop and say, "Oh, glad you asked. I just need a diaper change. I pissed myself. Thanks, Dad. I promise to make this all worth it one day. We'll explode mini volcanoes just like you dreamed." But instead, we went through the list of needs. "Okay, you're naked and under a fan, so you're not hot. Maybe you're cold? You just ate, but are you still hungry? I just changed you, but did you poop yourself again? Or is it me? Did I not comb my hair? Is my face that unpleasant to look at? Did I poop myself again?" While we went through our list of guesses and Theo was still crying, our hearts would sink. We wanted to do anything and everything in our power to get him to stop. But sometimes we would try all our tricks and he'd still cry. It made us want to, well, cry. "Theo, you're breaking my heart," I'd tell him. "Wah," he'd say back. We brought him into this world and wanted him to be happy. We wanted to show him that, hey, this isn't such a bad place. At least we have each other, right? Also, pizza is something that exists. You're gonna love it. But he wasn't happy. We couldn't help but feel like it was our fault, like we were failing him. He was a direct result of a decision we had made. And while he cried and cried and cried, we also felt some anger, frustration, regret, fear, sadness, and fatigue. Basically a big old shit blender of all the worst emotions. Then we'd feel guilty for feeling those, like we were some sort of psychopaths for not exclusively showing patience and love. "What do we do?" asked Meredith while Theo cried so hard his face turned red and sweat accumulated on his neck. "Honestly, I don't know. But I do know that Theo is in what I like to call the fourth trimester. So he's gonna cry some," I said. "Jesus, stop with that," said Meredith. "Wah," yelled Theo. All the cries sounded the same at first, but then we started to distinguish slight differences between them like we were wine experts in Napa Valley. "I heard a touch of anguish with a hint of I'm cold. And is that a go fuck yourself I'm picking up on?" I'd say to Meredith. "This isn't a joke," she'd say. When we were in the middle of trying to calm our crying baby, we couldn't remember the books we read or classes we had sort of tuned into over Zoom. All we could remember was that we were in the fourth trimester and that our baby probably shouldn't be out in the world yet.
Wah!
Said Theo. God, this is intense, said Meredith. Well, this is what I like to call the fourth trimester, and it sort of sucks. I tried again. Dan, enough, please, I'm about to cry, said Meredith. Just like Theo, I said.
Wah!
Said Theo. The first few nights out of Neverland and in Hell were long ones. Where most people like to sleep for 6 to 8 hours straight, Theo, like all infants, preferred waking up every hour. Both Meredith and I got up throughout the night because dressing the circumcised penis was a two-person job. We wanted to make sure that thing stayed the best in Santa Monica. It was in these nighttime moments that our new love for our new child was truly tested. It was when reality hit us, and we couldn't help but think, what did we get ourselves into? It's when that euphoria we felt at the hospital when he was first born started to fade. We went from saying, I can't believe he's ours, to fuck, I can't believe he's ours. I mean, we still wanted him and loved him, obviously. But no part of hell pressed our patience more than these initial 3 a.m. newborn howls. I had to start trying to make these times a little bit funny, if only for me. I remember one of the first nights I was up with him alone, him screaming at the top of his lungs while I tried to calm him. I said, Theo, I will give you $1 million if you stop crying right now. You'll be set for a portion of your life. What do you say?
Wah!
He said back. Okay, well, I guess you don't get $1 million then. You're going to regret that one day.
Wah! Wah!
He said. Or I started to ask him questions that should provoke crying. Theo, what did you think of 9/11? He said, I know, it was so sad, I hated it too, I said. We continued feeling especially lost during these first few days as we tried to figure out what the fuck we were doing. But for better or worse, we live in a time where information is widely available. There's so much of it, in fact, that people can pick and choose which reality they live in. Exciting times. So, we started watching how-to videos about baby care on YouTube. And since we now had a real baby instead of a teddy bear in a Utah Jazz jersey, it was much easier to follow along and try to replicate what they were teaching. We'd have Theo crying in one hand, our phone in the other, all while YouTube instructed us how not to be such shitty parents. But it helped. In those early days, YouTube taught us the best holds, the easiest and most effective swaddling techniques, how to burp Theo on our knee without disrupting his circumcision, how to best soothe him, how to help him get a poop out, stuff like that. In the middle of one night, while Theo was having a good yell, I clicked on a video called How to Calm a Crying Baby, and who should pop up but Dr. Hamilton's smiling face. He was giving a step-by-step tutorial on how to do that magical stranglehold he had performed for us in the hospital. I had forgotten about it until now. I decided to try it myself, and to my disbelief, it worked. Theo stopped crying. But as he did, I happened to notice something else. The video had over 55 million views. 55 million! I then Googled Dr. Hamilton, saw that he had several books and a podcast. I shook my head, annoyed that Theo's pediatrician's entertainment career was probably going better than mine. We survived the first few weeks of this hellish fourth trimester. We were exhausted, our ears were ringing from listening to so much crying. Our arms and backs were sore from holding Theo so much. It's cliche to say, but we realized that you have to just take it one day at a time, 1 hour at a time, 1 minute at a time, 1 second at a time, one nanosecond at a time. And while we lived nanosecond to nanosecond, I tried to put things in perspective. I reminded myself that we all started off as babies. We were all once helpless, crying, shitting messes, doing all we could to survive. No one is born a functional adult. Benjamin Button isn't real. And we were able to survive because we had great, patient parents who went through all the hell we were going through. All while not yelling at us, or shaking us, or slapping us, at least to our knowledge. So, when Theo was testing the limits of my sanity, I'd close my eyes and picture a baby version of me being rocked by my mom, her her passing me off to my dad when I was being extra fussy. In doing this, I started to realize that Theo wasn't a pain in the ass, but rather a rite of passage. It was my turn to pay it forward, to be hazed into this fraternity we call parenthood. And though it felt like Theo would be a baby forever, I also reminded myself that he wouldn't. One day he'd be running like a zebra and nailing jump shots over my head. He'd be learning to swear with friends and staying out past his curfew to drink, making me yearn for those simpler times when I could hold him in my arms and just stare at him, making sure he was safe. Remembering all this made me feel less alone, like we could survive what I like to call the fourth trimester. One night, when Theo was asleep, it appeared that we had a rare break from hell. Meredith, Maple, and I sank into our couch, thinking that maybe, just maybe, we could toss on a brainless Netflix show and fucking relax like the good old days. I turned to Meredith. "You doing okay?" I asked. "Yeah, hanging in there," she said. "That's all we can do. This has been hell, but we're getting through it," I said. "And one day, what I like to call the fourth trimester will be over," I added. Meredith looked like she might actually laugh this time. But then we heard a noise. "Shit, Theo's crying," she said as she popped off the cozy couch and back into hell. This has been Peter Pan Man Dan, a Mangano Movies and Media podcast. Thanks for listening. On the next episode of Peter Pan Man Dan, my old life and new life go to war, all because of the movie White Men Can't Jump. Talk to you then.